Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to our listeners. We are always delighted to have you join us on this, our show, which is the fifth week of Walking Between the Worlds and a new series that deal with life in our new times. Today's topic, which is guiding wisdom for everyday life, is one that's very, very dear to my heart. And our interviewer, who's Paul St. John, got called away about a half an hour ago on an emergency. So what I've done, my beloved family, is I've gathered your emails to our offices in Kentucky and Newport, and it's always best to actually send them to Kentucky. And we've gathered those together, and so I'll be answering your questions instead of his. So we are going to tackle today guiding wisdom for everyday life. And during the cycles of the fall that we have now left behind us, as we've gone into a cosmic ascension of such magnitude that we finally have come to a level of life where there has never been individuations before. And so at this time, it's the time to hone things down, to pare them down to the very core, because it is during cycles of descension that complexity arises. Well, during the cycles of descension, it was hard to see the forest for the trees. There were multiple questions that we had. What about this? What about that? But it is time now for us to take a look at the one important question in life, because ultimately there is only one. Within all of existence, this one question is, what is life enhancing and what is not? True wisdom, however, does not take life at face value and considers the benefit to indwelling life rather than the appeasement of appearances. In other words, beloved ones, when we are taking a look at what is life enhancing and what is not, we are considering the interconnectedness of life, the ramifications and the effects every choice we make has on every other creature. It is a well-known I think they call it Nuka chiropractic, that does very small movements. And the theory for that is, if you have a long tube, and it seems to be very highly effective, but if you have a long tube and you fill it with marbles, let's say you want every single marble in that tube to move, it doesn't require anything other than just putting one more marble in the tube. Even if the tube is a mile long, every other marble will move. So it's the same in our own lives. The slightest action on our part has ramifications that goes throughout everything. The way that the whole pond is affected when a pebble is dropped into its middle. So let's take a look at some of the questions that you've asked about finding and living with guiding wisdom in our everyday lives. The first question comes from someone in Texas, and it is, how does one discern when it is best to admit not knowing and being confused and seek answers, and when it is best to be still and trust that answers will come to us, as we can only not know if we have chosen to believe this is true? Well, let me see, what is she saying? She is actually saying that confusion is a choice, which is very, very important, because indeed it is. That's a very core part of the Toltec teachings that has been a very much of a guiding light upon my way. And then in August of 2006, when the polarity in the cosmos changed, 90% of the old way of the Toltec teachings changed because the purpose of life changed. However, there are new things to take its place, and this is one of the guiding wisdoms, that confusion is a choice. So when is it best to admit not knowing and being confused and seek answers? And when is it best to be still and trust that answers will come to us? So the only thing to seek, really, is the correct questions. If we are able to interpret them, detailed meanings of symbols of dreams and environment, which, you know, incidentally, we give in both the Ring of Truth and Secrets of the Hidden Realms, how to interpret those symbols, not only in your dream time, but in fact, in your everyday life. So, through them, answers present themselves from everywhere, once we have posed a question. So you see, my brothers and sisters, the very, very important thing is to ask the right question. Excuse me. The answer may then produce another question, which we may seek to define and get answered, but seek therefore the questions, not the answers. The answers require only awareness. And so, if we obsess about the questions, you know, as the person suggests, as a possible way of going about it, what about this, what about that, when we obsess about the questions, what happens, in fact, is that we lose energy. Energy and consciousness are very closely connected, because if we define really what consciousness is how much of our reality we can be aware of at any given time. Well, you see, the left brain, for those specifically of you that are still in a dialogue in your heads and have not yet reached the mastery stages where you are in a complete stillness of mind, the left brain takes up all initial energy. Only what is left goes to right brain. But left brain only pertains with what you already know. Everything you don't know has to come through right brain, and we have to admit that what we don't know is far greater than what we actually know. So in other words, the greater part of consciousness, even though right brain may be picking it up, if we've drained energy by obsessing about questions, we will not have enough to access the questions about the new, about the unknown. So it's important that when confronted with the unknown and that which is unfamiliar, that we tackle it in the proper way. So one of the ways not to do it is to obsess about the questions. Another way not to do it, which is actually the biggest culprit, is to think we know. Oh, you know, I know what's wrong with this person. I'm a healer, but I know what's wrong with this person. Because the point is that I've had similar cases before, and this and with this worked, so this has to be what's wrong. My brothers and sisters, every person is the unknown. Because everyone is a unique consciousness, as vast as the cosmos having a human experience. How can any one set of circumstances fit the next person? Just because it did the last one. And my words are the unknown. And so what exactly do I mean by these terms? You have to get very, very still and really sort of enter my head, which also is very still, but feel me through the heart. Look through my eyes. It's an empathic assimilation of what the other one sees. That is what true listening is. That most people hear words and think they know. How can they? In most instances, they weren't even listening. Their head was in a deafening dialogue. So that internal dialogue is a real obstruction to be able to hear promptings that come from the outside. Now, the third way that people respond to the unfamiliar and the unknown is that they will reject anything that does not conform to already held belief systems. And the sad thing it is that it's often the very spiritual New Age people that are breaking free from those established religions that then form a whole new one themselves by, oh, you know, I was told this in a channeling, so this is the way it is. The classes that I give now, my brothers and sisters, are very different from what I used to give, because the work that the infinite goddess of all life, the mother that birthed not only the father, but all life, has given for myself and those who know in their heart that they're meant to be at these week-long experiences of, I guess it's 5 days, really they're sharing the tasks Mother gave me that I would have had to do by myself. In return, they receive the most incredible information and quickenings, and they leave in their mastery because they volunteer to become the pivot points of the cosmos. So great a gift in the work that we do, the returns are very great as well. But before this, when teaching really used to follow a curriculum and information was exchanged, one of the things that I asked people to do is to admit upfront that they know nothing. To throw everything they thought they knew of every channeling that gave them some identity that made them go back and pay some more. My brothers and sisters, everything has to go out the window. Some may be accurate, but if it's accurate, it will reveal itself, and it comes in the quietness of the mind. So, the next thing that we have is another question, but we have just a minute before break. So, how I will spend this minute instead is I will tell you how to approach something that is new. You approach it with the utmost humility. Humility means that we acknowledge that every being is a strand in the vast, beautiful spider web of life, and that no strand is more important than another. And so we approach it with humility of knowing we don't know. And then the last thing that we do is we move forward with our shield of self-confidence based on the fact that we will always choose our highest choice, and this is impeccability. Join us after the commercial break.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
You've been walking between the worlds with Al Mean. To learn more about Al Mean and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back with us this day on Seventh Wave Network and Walking Between the Worlds. I am Al Mean, and we are speaking today about the guiding wisdom for everyday life. And today is a special day. It's the first. I am answering your questions, emails that have poured into our office. And we do send regular question-answer emails out for those of you that wish to join our email list. You can sign on right on our website, www.spiritualjourneys.com. And so the questions that are not answered in the question-answer lists that we have been sending out on a regular basis, and we are also now going to be placing it in a magazine that previously you paid a bit to download, but I've just informed my office that it should be given for free. This is my Christmas present to my listeners and my beloved fellow light showers and way showers on the path, that from this point on it will be free. So let's take a look at the next question. Is desire the way ego clings to illusion, as so many Eastern teachers say, or the very mechanism which drives creation? or both? If both, how does one discern which desires are life-enhancing and which are not? This gentleman is from Canada, and I'm very delighted. It's an excellent question. Desire is the very foundation of all true emotions. Love is the desire to include. Trust is the desire to surrender, and so forth. There's only one question to decide, as we have said in answering the previous question. What is life-enhancing and what is not? To be life-enhancing, something has to benefit all life equally. It is when it benefits the one at the cost of any others that it becomes non-life-enhancing. As it has become exclusive instead of inclusive. The elimination of desire as part of the moving force of life results, in fact, in stagnation. This is one of the reasons why, until August of 2006, only 9 of our ascended masters had actually graduated from the human kingdom to the God kingdom. Actually, that's not 2006, I beg your pardon. It's 2005. After 2005, some of the earthly ascended masters that were in the flesh started to move through into the God kingdom. And today, there are scores of humans walking around you that are, in fact, not in the human kingdom, but in the God kingdom. Massive configurations that took place, reconfigurations of the energy fields, for somebody that could see energy, that would be very obvious. It is not so obvious because form does tend to hide if we approach it with mind rather than heart. Now, my brothers and sisters, the ascended mastery realms that until August of 2005, it was according to what the Mother Goddess at the time said, the most stagnant place on earth, other than the underworld that we then had. One of my friends went into the ascended master realms for longer times than I have. I've gone in and out to speak to them, but she actually went there. There was an attack on her, and it was a place of safety. So she actually went to the ascended mastery realms, and she was very exuberant. They all walked in silence and meditation. They were so far expanded. She was sitting on one of their benches. One of the masters came and sat on top of her, didn't even notice. He was that expanded. Every time she tried to get exuberant or make a noise or laugh, they would pour water over her to get her to be quiet, because they asked her multiple times and she would not calm her little exuberant spirit down. So that is what happened. And, it was totally stagnant. It is no longer that way, because Mother has made massive changes, and there are far more ascended masters. Most of the masters in my classes are in ascended mastery. And so, there's enough of them here on earth, in the flesh, that there is activity in the ascended master realms. Although an ascended master is hooked to the same sort of soul group, if you will, of those in the unseen realms, being proactive in embodiment in the flesh creates activity also for them, because in life all things have to pulse. Now, there is something else I just want to add to this brother's answer that I'm giving his question, and that is this. There's a vast difference between desire, which is a beautiful, beautiful emotion. There are currently wheels of 96 pure emotions, states of being, physical expressions, there are heart energies. These are all frequencies. And I'll tell you the huge ramifications of this in a moment. There are four magnificent wheels that are physical. And they are, the sexual expressions, sensual expressions, essential ascension expressions, and then the physical expression. So these are actually like frequency bands lying in rings in concentric circle, and they hold open the space of our cosmos. But we have, as man and the microcosmos of all things, we have the same around our DNA. So as you live these frequencies, you align yourself with the infinite power and the energy source of the cosmos, and aging ceases, and you would catapult yourself into these higher stages. Now, a good place to find those, my brothers and sisters, at least the beginning stages of it, is in the Ring of Truth. Also, you can go for free onto the Belvaspata, Belvaspata. We have a link to that site at the end of our website, but you can just look up Belvaspata, and that healing modality, which is a gift from Mother to humanity, is featuring the 12 pure frequencies that are emotion. So take a look at that as well. If it is a desire, it will be one of those pure frequencies. But a desire is optional. You want a cookie? Okay, the cookie is baked for someone else. No problem. It was just a preference. It is when your happiness starts to depend on the fulfillment of what people call, quote, their desires, that it is no longer a desire. It is a need. So we should differentiate between those two as we bring an answer to this. So they said, he says, depending on your answer, this is the second question that he threw in. He says, depending on your answer, is sexual energy also misunderstood? Is it true that sexual energy is also a powerful tool for transformation? And we've written about sexuality and spirituality. We have a little bit of it in Journey to the Heart of God, and then we have quite a bit more in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. But we explain there that when you go through the stages of your evolution, the perception yielding emotion and emotion yielding perception, which is so necessary, especially when you come to the top level, the apex of the human experience, which is ascended mastery. At that point, you will need to generate up a huge amount of emotion at the exact time when you don't feel like it, because you're that expanded. That's why our ascended masters were so out there. They had no desires. They just lived in this vast, expanded reality because their perception was that vast. You cannot get across the chasm that lies between kingdoms into the God kingdom without knowing the power of being able to raise the Kundalini. Now, it can be done sexually, but there are other ways to do it. And the other way to have a dynamic sexual life, which clearly the Infinite prizes very highly, for there's an entire wheel holding the cosmic space open of sexual expressions. They are exquisite frequencies. My brothers and sisters, the love affair you have is first and foremost with yourself. Do you love every part of your body the way you would love a beloved? Do you, in fact, have a passionate love affair with the world around you? The biting into a crisp apple with the juice running down your chin, the wonderful warmth of soup when you come in from the snow, the feel of the rain on your face. These are the things to have the love affair with. It's only then that you're ready for a partner. So my brothers and sisters, as we go up the ladder of our evolution, first you have very wide, expanded vision, then you will have heightened emotions, then you'll have expanded vision, and it's like an elastic pyramid where the base stretches, and then the emotions, which are the sides, will peak, then the base has to adjust, but then it over-adjusts. it is when you reach the apex of human endeavors that you will need to know that this love affair of life is necessary for the emotions to awaken strongly enough to be in the love affair either with yourself or with life. Takes full awareness each moment exactly the beauty that is around you. It is a way of looking at life, and it's truly a way of seeing life. Join us after these commercials.
Discovering Our True Nature with host Brandon Cohen takes you on a journey into consciousness with guided meditations and a discussion which supports connection with your true self. Join Brandon every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on the 7th Wave Network and discover your true nature.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to my light family. This is Almaine, and we are discussing wisdom for everyday living as masters and way showers to humanity. And so we are answering your questions today, something which we haven't done before. And we are now addressing a question by a brother in Florida. I have actually read some spiritual sexual techniques in which it is advocated during oral sex that the man's semen be swallowed for the enhancing of life force and energy. What is your opinion about this practice? Okay, so I have said in many of my audio lectures that the body fluids during the sex act, they are in fact telepathic communicators for hours afterwards. In other words, the semen will communicate to its owner what it picks up from its environment. The ideal is for the fluids of the male to stay in the vagina for at least 6 hours. In this way, the love existing between the partners is being communicated and their essence shared. For semen to be put into the extremely harsh stomach acids is highly detrimental to the male and causes messages of distorted frequencies, and that actually resembles cancer, to be broadcast to his prostate. It is definitely not advised. Whether it benefits one partner or not is therefore beside the point. One cannot benefit at the expense of another. All life is interconnected. So, you know, there are orders out there that utilize this issue of the man's sperm. There's a white tigress movement out there that's quite old, where the women stay looking very, very young for a very long time. They only engage in oral sex. But the point of the matter is that they are draining the masculine energy out of his root chakra. My brothers and sisters, this is of course a separate issue than what this brother has asked, but I just want to tell you, there's only one life expressing as the many. and to take from any part of life without giving an equal exchange. And fleeting pleasure is not an equal exchange for draining another's energy. We have seen in our earlier segments of the show how energy and consciousness are in fact connected. If a woman through practices like the white tigresses do drain the energy of a man, you're lowering his consciousness. And in my opinion, that borders on black magic. So let's go to the next question. This is from another person. They're asking if oral sex is advisable. Do sexual fluids always transmit telepathic communications of their environment, even if a non-living environment? Obviously, they have read the portions of it in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. And it's not at all that I'm suggesting that oral sex is not advisable. I was merely referring to the practice in that specific book of draining another's energy. And yes, it will always transmit telepathic communications, even if it is in water. Even if it has to be a toilet, it's far less hostile than stomach acid, which is caustic enough to eat its way through a rubber tire. And, you know, cancer eats up flesh. It takes it over. And Mother has removed the real part of all disease. In August of 2006, when the disease in the cosmos, namely those who represented distortion and illusion throughout the cosmos as the major perpetrators, were entirely done away with. And they actually, in higher aspects where we hadn't yet come to in the cosmos, they still resided. But by July of 2007, all negative beings anywhere was entirely eliminated. So, you know, the disease itself is not real. But a frequency simulating cancer can make the body believe that it does have cancer and it will go to the man's prostate. So it's important where your semen is put. It's important where your hair is put when it's cut. You know, Native Americans have known this for a long time. It's vitally important where a placenta is put, or the cord that connects the baby, the umbilical cord. So to bury that respectfully in the earth is a lot better than to toss it in the trash. So, if we want to take a look as to whether this applies to swallowing the sexual fluids of a woman as well, it absolutely would, because both of them do the same. The woman's sexual fluids do the same. They communicate for hours back to its owner. So, let's go to our next topic. How can one reconcile the need to learn from past experience and not develop expectations or beliefs which cause us to recreate the present based on past experience? Does being fully in the moment include what we have learned in the past? So, there are some criteria that can be used as guidelines. Firstly, we give at the level someone is able to receive. Secondly, we give at the level at which there is need. Sorry, I have two questions mixed up here. Let's go back to the first one. I'm answering the second one because this person wrote two in a row. Let's go back to the first one. So, to learn from past experience, yet live fully in the moment. My brothers and sisters, when something pulls you out of the moment, you have just reacted. And thoughts arise as a resistance to life. Living with full awareness to the moment is living in silence. When that knee-jerk reaction happens, it is time to either, if you're in the middle of something, jot it down, and at night take time to see what exactly you felt during that moment, and trace where it came from, perhaps in your childhood, and see what is the lesson, what is the role I played, what was the contract that was fulfilled, what was the mirror that was pulled in. We pull in mirrors of that which we are, that which we've given away, that which we've yet to become, that which we judge, and so on. And if you want to go to my books, they are Journey to the Heart of God has extensive information on recapitulating past events, meaning to get their insights. So you get the insights, you make it your own, and you don't think about it again. You don't let a certain event determine your present. The insights alone must determine the present. And so, my brothers and sisters, we live moving forward with our hearts and not our minds. We discard old expectations. We trace where every motive for every action comes from. And slowly, step by step, we make of our lives an exquisite temple of mastery and not a tavern in which the old low frequencies dwell. But I see it's time for another commercial break. We'll be right back, and please stay with us. Don't go away.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Elmin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Elmin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is. And it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Elmin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Elmin. To learn more about Elmin and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So let's get now to the second part of this brother's question. And he asks, when it is appropriate to give? When should giving be done that it doesn't enable another to stay on their treadmill? And when would it be appropriate? That's a very, very good question. So, let's take a look at this. There are some criteria that we can use as guidelines. Firstly, we give at the level someone is able to receive. In other words, light workers frequently just want to just spill their beautiful insights into another's lap. It has changed their life, and they want to so much tell the other person about it. You have to give people milk if that's all they can digest. Steak comes later. Secondly, we give at the level at which there is need. In other words, giving someone a dollar who has just gone into bankruptcy is not responsive to their need. Sometimes someone is sitting on the side of the sidewalk and they're asking you for a buck, but really what they want to do is they're a runaway teenager and they want to get home. All they need is a bus ticket. And that might be better responsive than trying to give them a dollar, but now it took them 3 days to gather enough money, but in between they had to eat, so now they spent some of that money again. So gauging the need is an important part of giving. Thirdly, living in full awareness in the moment. It will make it easier to hear one's heart's response. Our hearts will guide us when it's time to stop and lend a helping hand. My brothers and sisters, we need to be really aware of this. There is always a group of people willing to manipulate by being helpless. One of the biggest forms of tyranny is the Dumb Bunny Act. I'm so helpless. Please jump in and save me. And, you know, they might be doing this because when they were a child, they were sick a lot, and when they were, then it was very enforcing to them that their parents loved them. When there was care given, they may be equating loving with please take care of me. That's one way to do it. Also, they may be so weak in their own self-empowerment, and one empowers that which you focus on. It might be a parasitical attempt to feed off the power of others. And also often, when their own inner child is not parented, it is in fact a way for their child to feel that it's getting attention. And unfortunately, there are always those who, not feeling lovable and desiring to be needed, are willing to jump into their trap and save them. It is, you know, the case that many healers go into healing because they have not done the self-work that makes them feel lovable, so they settle for feeling needed. And giving then comes from a very hollow place. It's for this reason that the heart will guide us in stillness and in clarity. It is also what will guide us as to what level of assistance they are open to receiving. They may not need advice, but just a listening ear. The perception we may want them to get may be far beyond their present capability. True listening to determine how to help comes from seeing through their eyes, in total stillness of the mind, as we mentioned earlier. In this way, the true spirit of assistance, which is empowerment, can come forth. You know, these frequencies that I've been speaking of, they're actually in pairs. And like everything that lives and grows and is dynamic and has dynamic balance in the cosmos, they pulse one another. And so what happens is that when you're looking at generosity, which is the desire to give, its opposite pole is empowerment. Because the more you empower someone with your gift of giving, the deeper your generosity flows. And it is so important that when we listen to another in that total silence of the mind, without any need to be right or to be the guide or to be the counselor, just truly seeing through their eyes, you might actually see what the real question is. You know, we spoke about that earlier, that the thing to ask is not what are the answers, it's what are the real questions. All around us, life speaks the answers to us. We just have to become literate in reading its signs, like the ones we give in. And by the way, the ones we do give are an accumulation of over a million years of the oral Toltec traditions that are passed on from Nagual to Nagual. The dream symbols have been carefully explored by these Nagual who explore the nature of reality. They are not just arbitrarily made up. And it's under the realm of the dreams, or the realms of the dreams in Journey to the Heart of God, in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, and also in the Ring of Truth. Let's go to someone else's question now in California. How does one overcome the pain of the past? There are two ways, my beloved sister. The older, more linear way, which although not entirely obsolete, has yielded to a higher way. And the old way entails gaining the necessary perception to help you understand why you volunteered for that specific role of being the one injured. In many instances, the major light workers have agreed to play out certain illusions that have plagued humankind for a very long time. Gaining the perceptions changes the perspective for all, if they choose to embrace new vision. So, let's just take a look at this for a second. So the first reason that we may have had this pain is, number one, that we embodied it, either to overcome it on behalf of the many as one of the major light beacons, or B, we took illusion upon ourselves so that others in our environment might learn, and they may be taking the role of perpetrator for some reason, but also might be a major light worker. It might be because there was something to solve. And there was indeed something to solve, because until August of 2006, there were portions of the infinite's being that we did not know whether they were in fact life-enhancing or not. We did not know whether they were part of the mother's reflection back to herself, the infinite mother, or if it was that it was illusion brought on by the fact that we also have some portion which is freedom of choice. Now, there's another reason why we have suffered so greatly in the past, and that is that until that time, opposite energies and physicality attracted. It's no longer the case, which brings me to our second place. My brothers and sisters, growth is now exponential. The more you embrace the same energy and matter people that will now be entering your life, the more you live in the joyous emotions that Mother has given, the more healing will come exponentially and effortlessly. You know, it's unfortunately time for us to close, and we certainly hope you'll join us next week again. Thank you so much for your presence. My love to you always.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.